The day that I came home, I can chalk up as the most intense pain that I have ever felt in my life. She was gone. There was absolutely nothing left. The biggest fear was that I've become the person that I never wanted to become.
John's addiction to pornography was destroying his life and his family. But God can take what seems to be beyond repair and build it in ways we never thought possible. Moving from defeat to victory, next on Words to Live By. Do you believe God in His mercy can overcome any sin we commit? That He can actually rescue us and set us free from the most devastating of behaviors and choices? Hi, I'm Barbara Follis. Thanks for joining us for Words to Live By. Each week, we present stories of lives transformed through a personal relationship with Jesus Christ and through the words to live by found in the Scriptures. We're a part of Our Daily Bread Ministries, whose mission is to make the life-changing wisdom of the Bible understandable and accessible to all. You know, sometimes we make some pretty awful decisions that not only impact ourselves, but those around us, including our families. But God is greater than the worst of our mistakes, and He is faithful and just to forgive us when we sincerely turn away from those sins. The Lord can also use them to turn our lives around, if we'll let Him. When our production team met with John and Nicole, we were so encouraged to hear how God had done an amazing work in both of their lives, especially as they found their marriage disintegrating under the influence of pornography. It was a destructive cycle that began years before they even met.
I found a pornographic magazine. I was the age of 10, and that really kind of started me down this path in my life of it being a constant vehicle for me, really, where over the next 20 years, I wouldn't be able to go a day or two without either looking at a magazine or a video, or as I got older and of age, going to a strip club and participating in those types of activities.
We went through premarital counseling. We got the seal of approval. I wanted the fairy tale. I wanted the white dress and coming down the aisle and the awesome, amazing wedding, which would, of course, lead to an awesome, amazing marriage for the rest of our days. And I found pornography for the first time 3 weeks before our wedding day, and it broke me. I remember just bawling on the front porch because I found this and I didn't know what to do. And He, I think, genuinely wanted to turn it off. And He had said to me, after we're married, I'm done. I'm not going to do that anymore. And I think He really believed that. And so the thought of maybe waiting, even having found this, was just not something that I wanted to do, because we had all these plans already. And it's 3 weeks before the wedding. And I had my soon-to-be husband telling me that everything's going to be okay and I can turn it off. And I didn't have any experience with it. So I had no idea whether it would be something he could turn off. I believed that he could.
But John's battle with pornography raged on. He tried to hide his addiction as he and Nicole built their family. They took part in marriage counseling, but Nicole's suspicions continued to grow. Eventually, she made the very difficult decision to hire a private detective who confirmed her fears. John was continuing to use pornography and was engaging in inappropriate dialogue with other women. Nicole believed in order to protect herself and her sons, they would have to leave their home and perhaps end their marriage.
I had the paperwork filled out. I had contacted a lawyer. Being a stay-at-home mom, having depended on John financially, all of a sudden I'm looking at the prospect of becoming a single mom with three boys and didn't have a whole lot of financial means. So these are all these things and questions that I'm looking at to become prepared for this. And I spent a good month in preparations lining up people. We set a date. I had 15 people come to our house that day, and each one played a part. We rented a truck and we unloaded the entire house except for the bed and his clothes and some things in the office. We packed up the boys in the van. I told them we were going on an adventure, and I realized that somebody had packed all the groceries into this van for me and the kids. And I started bawling, and I looked at my mom and I said, I can't leave him without any food. I could not leave. And so she and I took a trip to the local supermarket and purchased about $100 worth of groceries to put back in the house for him, because I couldn't bear the thought of him coming home to an empty house and he just wouldn't have any food. And then we took off and met a contact who was going to help the boys and I into a local woman's shelter.
I came home, and when I walked in the house, oddly enough, it felt cold, was the initial sense that I got. But it only took a couple of steps up towards the kitchen, looking off to my right to see that the couches were missing. And by the time I got up the rest of the stairs, the reality of the situation virtually knocked me out, because I knew. I just knew. No way was I prepared for this. I ran to my son's rooms and realized that, I mean, it was true. She was gone, because there was absolutely nothing left in the rooms. I went through a wave of emotions, from anger to bitterness to resentment to fear to absolute terror. Where did they go? What's going to happen? The biggest fear was that I've become the person that I never wanted to become. I didn't sleep at all that first night. My heart was racing constantly. I tried to call her. I didn't know where she was. The next morning, after having not slept, I got up and was really in self-preservation mode, thinking as clearly as I possibly could in that situation. My first step was to start the process of trying to find out where she was. So that, for me, was driving to her parents' home and kind of being a bit of a spy to get out. Where is she? Looking everywhere for any signs, any traces of her or the kids. I remember driving south and seeing Nicole's father driving north. That was really the hardest phone call I ever had to make. So I immediately got on my cell phone and called him. And again, more reality of the situation setting in when he answered and I asked, "Where is my wife?" His response, and I'll remember this till the day that I die, was, "She's in a safe place." The inference there is that I'm not one. That hurt. Did I deserve that? Absolutely, I deserved it. I deserved everything that was going on right then.
Well, was John finally beginning to grasp the consequences of his actions? Was he ready to give up his sin and seek God's forgiveness and restoration? As our story continues,
going to her grandfather's house, that can only be seen as divine intervention, because I walked right up to the front door and I knocked, and Nicole's grandmother opened the door and she had tears in her eyes. And she looked right at me and she said, "We've been praying for you and we were hoping you'd come."
You know, many people, both men and women, secretly harbor addictions to pornography. Usually it starts with a quiet compromise, but soon, shame and fear of being discovered turn an occasional slip-up into a prison of addiction. Well, the good news is there's hope for everyone who feels caught in this cycle of defeat. The online Day of Discovery video titled "Trapped: Finding Freedom from Pornography" guides those who can't seem to get free on their own strength to find help and healing beyond the guilt and shame. You can view the video without cost or obligation when you visit our website, words.net. In addition to exposing the devastation of sexual addiction, this video includes an honest and sensitive discussion with Dr. Larry Crabb, Dr. Joe Stoll, and Our Daily Bread Ministries writer and Bible teacher, Mark DeHaan, as they offer practical and biblical advice to those who are looking for freedom from their addiction. Trapped also includes a discussion just for women and another one just for men. In this video, you'll hear real, honest stories from actual people who have struggled with this addiction. You'll hear how pornography strains relationships and marriages, but how God brings healing and restoration. Addiction is not final. No matter how trapped you may feel, there is a way out, and God wants so much more for you. Now, it's available online at absolutely no cost or obligation to you. Just go to words.net. That's words, W-O-R-D-S.net. When the consequences of John's actions finally sunk in, he frantically attempted to find his family.
I ended up going to her grandfather's house. That can only be seen as divine intervention, because I walked right up to the front door and I knocked. And Nicole's grandmother opened the door and she had tears in her eyes. And she looked right at me and she said, "We've been praying for you. And we were hoping you'd come." And I got about 5 feet in the door before I latched onto her grandfather, my grandfather, and I collapsed. It was the end of the road for me. And I can't say that I cried. It was a weeping. The years of junk that had been building up in my life finally had an outlet. And it was her grandfather, really kind of the patriarch of her family. And we talked for 4 or 5 hours, just sitting on the couch. He asked me one question, had I cheated on Nicole, and I lied to him. And I said, no. Even after all of that, there was still a part of me that was trying to control the situation. And for me, I immediately knew I wasn't done yet. I hadn't confessed everything that I needed to confess in the situation. So I slept on that. I got up the next day and I called her grandfather and asked if I could come and see him again. And I went over and I saw him, and immediately I said, I have to apologize. I lied to you yesterday. You asked me, had I cheated on Nicole? And I said, no. And I need to be 100% honest with you and say that I did. I did cheat on Nicole. And the old man got this little grin on his face, like only he can. And he looked at me and he put his hand on my arm and he said, John, now we can begin. He had a sense. That was my turning point. At that point, everything that I had been engaged in was in the open. Subsequent to that, it was calling my pastor. It was calling one of my friends who was an elder in the church that we're going to say, look, what you know about me is not who I am. And just being as open and as transparent as I possibly could, riding the wave of the emotion that I was on right then. And then also, from a practical standpoint, to begin to put things in place in my life, to put barriers up to protect myself from what I know my tendencies to be.
John was finally on the right track. He confessed his sin and asked God to forgive him. And he was seeking counsel and the accountability of others. John also asked Nicole and his family for forgiveness, even though he knew that there was no guarantee that their relationships would ever be restored. They all knew John still had a battle before him.
For me, pornography is the damage of images that cannot be unseen. And what I mean by that is, you take in a certain amount of visual stimulus, and there are things that you are just absolutely not going to be able to forget. Think about it in terms of happy moments, of exciting moments, of parties, of, I can think back to my wedding with Nicole, and there are images there that can't be unseen, and ultimately it's because I don't want to unsee them. They're happy memories. But there are also things that you suffer these unintended consequences of, where you've looked at things that are not God-honoring. In fact, I would say, quite honestly, these are things that are straight from the devil himself. And based on who we are as people, there are things that are ingrained on our minds that, as you're out in the world, will trigger these memories to pop back up. They are almost embedded in your subconscious. And it's not only images that cannot be unseen, it's thoughts that cannot be unthunk, is a way to put it. You know, it's actions that can't be undone. It's things that I've done and seen and experienced that I know I'm going to have to deal with for the rest of my life. And it's my goal and my mission now to minimize, if not mitigate, the effect that those can have on me as an individual, as a Christian, as a Christ follower, as a husband, and as a father. There was a tremendous amount of confession that had to happen. I had been lying to myself and to anyone who would listen to me for years and years and years. One of the things that I signed up for that I had completely been against, because it would have been too revealing for me, is counseling. I made that call, and those were weekly meetings with him for months, and it provided me with the ability to get all of that junk out in the open and to process it. Not just to confess junk, but let's take a step back away from that and to say, well, where did this all come from? How did it manifest itself in this way? What are the underlying root causes and the core feelings, the core emotions that are driving this? And that was amazing for me. Originally, I had accepted Christ March 23rd of 1999. And it was a reacceptance, kind of this reinvigoration of my relationship as I sat with her grandfather. It was saying that I can do all things through him, not my strength, his strength, and really committing to that. The biggest part of it has been the faith-based support group that I'm a part of, my Bible study, if you will, a Bible study for addicts. But it's really just a bunch of guys who are trying to be honest, who are trying to walk the talk and to do what they say they're going to do. The whole goal of this group is to get to that point where when it's all said and done, we're going to hear the words, well done, good and faithful servant. So for me, it's been engaging with that group from a spiritual standpoint to continue to build my relationship with Christ. It's been reading my Bible. It's been reading Christian books on the topic. So that's what it's been for me, is just to continue to immerse myself in things that are good, to remove those things that are bad, to fill them with things that are God-honoring, and to focus on those things. So for me, from a spiritual side, it's been to engage in activities that honor God and build His kingdom as much as I have the strength and power to do.
We know that men are visual creatures, and that's how God has wired them, and that's an amazing thing. But from a wife and somebody who finds these images as well, these are not images that erase from her mind either very quickly. So it's not only damaging clearly to the husband, but also to the person who finds them. It starts feeding into insecurities in your mind and your heart about your body and your image and what you look like as a woman. And I think who you are, you start mistrusting things about yourself. So it damages you emotionally and spiritually, clearly. But then when it comes to your intimate life together as a couple, you know, it's all downhill, because you can't help but wonder, is he really looking at me, or is he thinking of somebody else? And I'm not good enough. And all the work that I've done to save our marriage and go to counseling and to continue to find these images, not just once, but over and over and over again, those were the thoughts that I had, and it just really led to a deep, deep insecurity within myself that I'm still working to overcome. It was a tough process. For me, it was seeing the incredible amount of change that had occurred in John's heart. Even his manner of speech had changed, and his mannerisms had changed. He was clearly much more gentle. We kind of joke about it now, but he had kept his head shaved from the Marine Corps when he was in Iraq for 6 months. He'd actually kept that look going. He had the tough guy goatee, and that was part of the persona that he had. And actually, shortly after we started seeing each other again, he started growing his hair back. And that was the physical manifestation for me, just of some of the inward changes, because he really wanted to change everything about him. We are only separated for 5 months.
5 months.
So really, in the context of things, probably not very long. And I had a lot of reservations going back, and our counselors just strongly recommended and said, no, I think you guys are at a place that you need to be back together and start working on this together. And so we took that advice. And for me, it was his willingness to be transparent in all things. And at first, I was mad at God, because my mind was on, I was going to be a single mom. I wasn't prepared for John to turn around. I honestly didn't believe it at first at all. I really was uncertain and unsure. And I was mad, because this was not the future I'd envisioned for myself. I wanted to be separated and gone from this man. I still loved him, but I didn't want anything to do with him anymore. I knew I would have to deal with him, with the kids and such, but I was looking forward to maybe having a second life. So when God totally turned the tables on me and said, no, I'm going to totally revamp this guy's heart, you know, I was kind of ticked off about it. I didn't want to go back. I didn't want to risk any more being hurt and being in pain. And I had to open myself up to forgive. And it really became for me a crisis of faith, because I grew up with a lot of head knowledge of who God was and who Christ was. You know, I talked a little bit before about putting God in a box and putting parameters around him and who he is. And you hear about miracles and such. But, you know, up until this point, I hadn't really seen God's power in a way that I really believed he was capable of actually saving our marriage. And one of the tools that God used for years and years was a couple of girlfriends of mine. We would get together on a fairly regular basis, and we prayed for years and years and years for John. I mean, they would hear me cry and vent, and we would pray over John, and we would pray for our marriage. And what's cool about that is that this is the result of those prayers, and I fully believe that. I believe our reconciliation is because we refused to give up praying, and they refused to give up praying for me. Now, it led to a separation. To me, those prayers would have meant that John would have changed within the confines of marriage, me not having to separate from him or become divorced, right? But that's not what God had in mind. And what's been the greatest thing for me in all of this, and part of my healing, is the full belief in the power that our God has to save. Absolutely anyone. Because, you know, we say it all the time in church, there's nobody outside God's long arm. But I really fully believe that now. There is absolutely nobody on this earth that God can't reach.
And isn't that a wonderful truth? God is a God of restoration and healing, and there's no one on earth who's too far, too sinful, too damaged for the Lord to bring into a right relationship with Him. In just a moment, we'll hear some additional encouragement from John and Nicole for anyone who may be facing the temptation of pornography. If you or someone you love is caught in the devastating trap of addiction, you need to know that freedom is possible. In the two-part Day of Discovery video series, Trapped, Finding Freedom from Pornography, you'll hear the story of several people who found freedom from their addiction by admitting the truth about their helplessness. Now these individuals are helping to rescue others from sin's power. And you're invited to access this powerful, freeing online resource without cost at words.net. Again, there's no cost or obligation. You'll enjoy a candid and sensitive discussion from Bible teachers and Our Daily Bread contributing writers Dr. Joe Stoll and Mart DeHaan, and noted counselor and author Dr. Larry Crabb. You'll be encouraged that there is always hope, even in the midst of the worst of it. Whether you're the one entangled in addiction, or you've discovered the hidden secret of someone in your family, this helpful presentation explains how to be set free. Free from shame, guilt, addiction. Free to live life as fully as God intended. To view Trapped, Finding Freedom from Pornography, go online to words.net. That's words for words to live by, .net. And our thanks, as always, for your support of Words to Live By, because many people making even the smallest of donations enable Words to Live By and Our Daily Bread Ministries to reach others with the life-changing wisdom of the Bible. It's a horrible feeling to wonder if your spouse or someone you love has fallen victim to the lure of pornography. We asked Nicole what help she might offer to someone who is having those fears.
I would tell her to surround herself with women, people who she completely and utterly trusts to help her keep her inner compass. Is this really happening? Because it's such a sin that is so easy to hide that you just don't trust yourself anymore. You know, and I would affirm her in who she is and just love on her where she's at. But then I would tell her, quite honestly, 9 times out of 10, there's more going on than meets the eye. You know, I was really naive in a lot of ways, thankfully so, but this was a huge wake-up call for me that I really need to take a vested interest and look at what my husband was really doing and look hard. The other thing I would mention would be that I realized that the direction that I took was the right thing for who John was and for our marriage, but it is not the right avenue for everyone. And we have walked with other couples who struggle as well. And some of those couples have had separations in their marriages. Some have not. For ultimate healing, there needs to be counseling involved for both parties, individually and as a couple. There needs to be a support group. She's got to be in counseling because this healing process takes a long time. When you break trust, it is not easily repaired. It takes a lot of trust-building activities to get that trust back. And that self-confidence in who you are as a woman.
And we also asked John for encouragement and direction for the person involved with pornography, but is trying to fight it. Where does he or she start?
It's interesting that you think, having been through all the stuff that I've been through, I'd be more empathetic to guys, but I think I'm not, because I know how guys' minds work. Because they fell prey to the same lies that I did, that it's a victimless crime, and that I don't affect anyone else with what I do behind closed doors. Psychologically speaking, everything that you do behind closed doors affects every relationship that you're engaged in your life, whether directly or indirectly, whether you want to think it does or not. How you carry yourself is directly impacted by those things that you do. Some of the guys that I've talked to and have had opportunity to walk with, I pretty much spell it out in black and white. Do you want your marriage to work? You have to want your marriage to work. It gets to that point, because if you were like I was early on, just kind of skating by, you may very well end up in the same situation that I was in, where I, for all intents and purposes, thought that it was over. But for a guy that's struggling with it, certain questions need to be answered. There's a lot of whys that need to be understood. Is it subconsciously from something that happened in the past? Is there a trigger point that leads you into doing what you do? You know, you can get involved with certain things when you're hungry, when you're angry, when you're bored, when you're isolated, when you're tired, when you're stressed. Are those things occurring in your life right now that are driving you to this? Secondly to that, I would say that this is your issue. You need to own it. No one is making you do this. You know, something for me that I had often told myself was that if I don't have the opportunity to be intimate with my wife, well, then that's the only kind of vindication that I need to go and look at pornography. That is not an excuse. That's a lie that we tell ourselves. And digging into those things, ultimately, like what we've talked about here, is kind of a threefold approach. And again, I want to make the statement that this is what works for me. I can offer advice, but it needs to be owned by that individual. You know, the fear, specifically in support groups, is that if I were to tell you what to do and it doesn't work, that's my fault and not yours. If I go to church and I pray for God to take this away, but he doesn't, that's God's fault. No, it's not God's fault. We as humans with free will have a choice to make in all this. And so for me, it's accountability, it's counseling, and it's support groups. You have to immerse yourself in recovery to find recovery and understand that it's not called recovered for a reason. You will be in recovery for a long period of time. And if there was a marriage that's involved in that, an equation that I've used here is performance over time equals trust. It's going to take time. And quite honestly, it's not going to be anything that you really do directly to fix the situation. It's going to be how you carry yourself. It's going to be your character, your integrity, the things that you do when no one is looking. It all builds up into that equation. You can't rush it. You can't force it. You can't put it on a timeline.
We both believe that God, if he chose to, could come down and zap us with his power and totally transform John. But the beauty of the process is that we get to choose, and that brings glory to God through our choice. And we are not robots. He didn't create us that way. And I would not see his work, and I wouldn't know him in so many other aspects of his character as a deliverer, as a comforter, as someone who brings peace to me, an inner peace, the shalom type peace, and for John, a healer. And we have seen that evidence, and that's part of the miracle in our lives, is that he's allowed us to see those aspects of his character that we never would have before, and the power that that brings, and the reality of the power of praying scripture into our marriage. John and I have seen that, and that, like John's equation, performance plus time equals trust, God does that sometimes too. And he has shown us through his performance over time in our marriage, he absolutely can be trusted.
Absolutely. Whether it's a trial in your marriage like John and Nicole faced, or some other challenge that's impacting your life, God can be trusted. I hope today's story has encouraged you to look to God for strength, courage, and restoration for your life. Here's some additional encouragement and words to live by from 1 Peter chapter 5, verses 6 through 10. Humble yourselves, therefore, under God's mighty hand, that he may lift you up in due time. Cast all your anxiety on him, because he cares for you. Be alert and of sober mind. Your enemy, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion looking for someone to devour. Resist him, standing firm in the faith, because you know that the family of believers throughout the world is undergoing the same kind of sufferings. And the God of all grace, who called you to his eternal glory in Christ, after you have suffered a little while, will himself restore you and make you strong, firm, and steadfast. To him be the power forever and ever. Amen. I'm Barbara Follis, and those are Words to Live By. Words to Live By is provided by Our Daily Bread Ministries.